Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Jesse Abelman on a new exhibit which showcases the Samaritan people and how they continue to live in Israel and in isolation.
Not Jewish, not Arab, not Israeli, not Palestinian, but also very much part of all of those communities and cultures. Mm-hmm. The survival of a people that long, I just think, is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, their long-term ability to survive and maintain their tradition and culture, even if it's been a struggle and continues to be a struggle, you know, is to me a beautiful thing.
Patrick Herman talks with Jesse Abelman next.
As Christians, we refer to the Samaritans as a people group that once lived in the hill country above Jerusalem, but the Samaritan people group still exists today with a population of about 900. A new exhibit about the Samaritans has just been opened at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. on September 16th. Dr. Jesse Abelman is a curator with the Museum of the Bible and joins us on His People. Dr. Abelman, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm really, really happy to be here and excited to talk to you about the show.
Now, you get to oversee, I guess, the artifacts or the history of this 2,000-plus-year-old people group. That's quite a responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, one of the oldest pieces of Samaritan history and culture that I remember just when it came in from the first century BC, right? So can you imagine, right? From the island of Delos in Greece, a stone with a dedicatory inscription, right, pointing towards the Samaritans' holy mountain, Mount Gerizim, as you said, in the hills north of Jerusalem. You know, this is an ancient people, right, with a long connection back in the Bible and their own connection to the Bible, and being able to sort of help gather all of these ancient artifacts in one place and help tell their story, ancient and modern artifacts. We're telling the story of their entire history. From the Bible up until today is a great responsibility and a great privilege.
Now, tell us about the Samaritans just a little bit. Jesus interacting with the woman at the well, she was a Samaritan. We know that the Samaritans from Jesus' story that we now call the story of the parable of the Good Samaritan. But give us an overview of the Samaritan people, clansmen of the tribe of Joseph, right?
So, yes, the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, who are the sons of Joseph. Right. So the story they tell about themselves, their narrative, which differs from the narrative that we see in the Hebrew Bible in the Old Testament. Right. It's a slightly different story. The story they tell is that they are the descendants that after the Exodus, Egypt, when all of the Israelites entered the land of Israel, it says they settled where God wanted them to settle, where God had always wanted them to settle, in the area of the city of Shechem, now Nablus, and at the holy mountain of Mount Gerizim. Right. And so they say that at a certain point, the Judahites, right, some of the other tribes decided to leave. The high priest Eli, who we may know from the book of Samuel, decided to take off and create a new site of worship at first at Shiloh. And then later, David would move it to Jerusalem and Solomon would build the temple there. Right. And so there's a split very early in the Samaritan story. And so that's how they understand their history as an Israelite people descended from the tribes. And they think, you know, they're upholding sort of the true will of God, right? That's how they understand what their life there and everything they've done ever since for thousands of years.
And they're still around. So this is what surprised me, I guess, is because I just figured, you know, there are no more. But online, I saw that there's at least maybe about 900 Samaritans left.
Yeah, 850, depending on the day. Obviously, you know, babies are born, people die, but it's a small community. But, you know, at the turn of the century, they were closer to 120. So they have grown a little bit at the turn of the 20th century over the past 100 or so years. It's very much a micro community.
Now, you were just talking about, you know, they're kind of shunned maybe by the other tribesmen, but give us an understanding of that history. Why were they shunned and what happened? What was the split?
So it is millennia of history.
Yeah.
I would say that in terms of the relationship to the Jewish people, right, to the sort of the other Israelites. So it's been often a history of sort of like ambivalence and enmity up until really the 19th century when a rapprochement sort of took place, right? And so, and in general, as a sort of religious minority in the Near East, part of why they're so small now is just it's not easy to be a religious minority anywhere. And they had a hard time with the Byzantine Empire and then later under Islam. And only in more recent years have things gotten a little bit better. But getting back to the core of your question, right, the book of Ezra, right, talks already about a certain amount of negativity between Jews and Samaritans. Jews come back to the land of the Jews, the Judeans who were exiled to Babylonia come back, right? And the Samaritans who are there say, hey, you know, we wanna sort of reunite. And Ezra's like, well, I don't really trust what you've been up to since we've been gone. So I don't think that's a good idea. Right. And so already early on in the Bible, right, there's this sort of disagreement. And there was a fundamental disagreement about how to worship God and where to worship God.
Yeah.
Right.
They were actually opposed to the building of the temple in Jerusalem as well.
Jerusalem, yeah. Right. Yeah. They felt they had their own they don't like to call it a temple. They call it I think the word we tend to use, sacrificial compound.
Hmm.
But they had a sanctuary on Mount Gerizim. The ruins are still there, and they continue to worship, and actually they still do the Passover sacrifice every year there. Although that building is no more.
Hmm.
And it was destroyed by a Hasmonean king, right? A Judean king, about, I think, the second century BC, who felt that they were doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so later on you get in rabbinic texts, and in sort of medieval, the story I like to tell, I think, gives a good example of the kind of ambivalence that was often felt. And that'll tell a little bit about the positive changes that have happened in the past 200 or so years. There was a sort of about the ambivalence between Jews and Samaritans in the Middle Ages and in the ancient world. Is there was a traveler, his name was Benjamin of Tudela. He was a Jewish man who lived in Spain, and he wrote a famous travel log, right? A book about his travels as he traveled east from Spain all the way to sort of the western border of China. Right. And he wrote originally in Hebrew, was translated into Latin, it was translated into all kinds of European vernacular languages. It's a very sort of medieval bestseller, right? You could call it that. A lot of people read it, a lot of people were interested in it. And he gets, you know, as he's traveling east from Spain, he gets to the Holy Land and really the whole Eastern Mediterranean. He starts talking about the different groups that live there. And so he talks about the different Jewish groups. There are sort of two main Jewish groups at the time, Rabbinites and Karaites. And he talks about the Samaritans. He says there are these three communities and they live side by side, and the Rabbinites and Karaites will marry each other. They don't marry the Samaritans, but they kind of get along, right? They're not like outright, or they don't marry each other, but they coexist. This is in the land of the Holy Land itself, in the land of Israel, but also in Damascus and in Cairo and in other kind of the eastern shore of the Mediterranean, Samaritan communities there too. And he does two things. For his sort of Western European audience, Western European Jewish audience, who don't know the Samaritans either, right? Just from their sort of biblical and rabbinic texts, and for the non-Jewish audience, that's reading in translation, and from the New Testament also, right? For the Christian audience who do read his book, right? So he talks about how they have, you know, they maintain the Hebrew language in the ancient Hebrew alphabet, right? Which they use a different alphabet than the Jews do for Hebrew, same language, but different letters, the letters look different. And how they keep, he says, the Torah of Moses, Torat Moshe is the Hebrew, the Torah of Moses. Their whole Bible is just the Pentateuch, just the five books of Moses. They don't have any of the other 19 books of the Hebrew Bible.
Wow.
That's the entirety of their Bible. But he talked about it, the Torah of Moses, right? That's what he says. And so he recognizes sort of the antiquity of their culture and of their religion and its relationship to the Jewish religion and the shared culture. At the same time, you know, he also says, you know, some pretty harsh things about how he thinks they distort their religion, right? And so on the one hand, right, he recognizes the authenticity of their tradition, which was not always a given, right? But at the same time, he calls a lot of it into question. So there's a kind of ambivalence there, a discomfort when you see someone who's kind of close to you, but also different.
Yeah.
Right. And he's trying to sort of work through that as he's talking about them when he encounters them. So that's then. But then you have, as you get closer to the modern period, right, in the 1840s, there was a movement. And this is now, as the Samaritan community, right, in the Middle Ages, there were still, I don't know what the exact numbers were, but a fair number of Samaritans in the area, and these communities in Cairo and Damascus, right? And though by the 19th century, those don't exist. They're all at Shechem, they're all at Nablus, right by the mountain, basically. And a group of extremists, local Muslim extremists, are trying to lobby the Ottoman government, which is also Muslim, lobbying them to sort of say, historically, they have been sort of given religious tolerance, right? But we want to take that away from them. And the chief rabbi of Jerusalem at the time reaches out to the Ottoman government, and he has a good relationship with them. And he says, don't listen to these extremists, right? These people are descendants of the Israelites. They are just as much Israelites as us, and they deserve the same protections that we have, right? Which the Jews had longstanding protections under Ottoman government. And they listened to him, right? They didn't listen to the extremists. They listened to the chief rabbi. And so the Ottoman government maintained their protections. And that was a radical thing for a rabbi to say about the Samaritans at the time.
That was the 1800s, you said?
1840s.
1840s, yeah. Okay.
So that was sort of a watershed moment to sort of recognize really fully that shared tradition in history. And that's been the trend since then, I would say, the second presence of Israel. And we have, I'll tell you about this in a second, because this is one of my favorite, this is a great little thing in the exhibit. But so the second president of Israel was a man named Yitzhak Ben Tzvi, Isaac Ben Tzvi, who was also a scholar. And he moved to the land of Israel, to Jaffa in 1908, before the state of Israel existed, as part of sort of the project of creating the state of Israel. He was excited about that. And he wanted to learn all of the languages. He knew, you know, Hebrew was not yet a major spoken language. He already knew that, but you know, he came from Russia, and he wanted to make sure he knew Arabic, which, you know, major language in the region. So he went to stay with a family in Jaffa, and just by coincidence, it turned out the family was a Samaritan family.
Wow.
Right, the Samaritans had been in the area for a very long time. You know, they kept Hebrew as their liturgical language, as the ritual language, but most of them spoke Arabic as just the day-to-day language around them, because that was the language in the area. In the same way, Ben Tzvi spoke Russian because he came from Russia as sort of the day-to-day language, or I might speak English. I do speak English. So he's staying with the Samaritan family, and he gets to know them. He gets very close with them, and he learns Samaritan Hebrew, to read Samaritan Hebrew, as well as to speak Arabic, and they take him to the Holy Mountain to the community in Nablus to sort of see what's happening. And he hears a speech from the Samaritan high priest, because the Samaritans maintain that, because they still do the sacrifice on Passover, they maintain the priesthood as in a very sort of central part of their social structure and lives. It's very important to them. So he hears the high priest speak, and he's moved by this, and he becomes close with the Samaritan community. And so 40 some odd years later, when he's the second president of the state of Israel, he becomes, you know, his relationship with them helps sort of cement their place. And the institution of the presidency is one that has always had a close connection to the Samaritans, to the point that there's a wonderful Samaritan inscription from a medieval synagogue that was originally discovered and published by Ben Tzvi. I said he was a scholar as well. And for the past 15 or so years, has actually been on display in sort of this sculpture garden at the residence of the Israeli president, you know, the public gardens area. There's a sculpture garden there. It's been on display there for the past 15 years, and they loaned it to us to show at the exhibition, both because it's an important piece of Samaritan history to help tell that story, and also because the story of President Ben Tzvi is also an important piece of the story in terms of their relationships in the modern world. And so it helps us tell both of those stories. And the current president, President Herzog, was kind enough to send a very nice video message for us to play at our opening, which was very, very nice, just about the history of the presidency and the Samaritan people. And it was very, very nice thing for him to do. And he spoke very well.
Well, tell me a little bit about that exhibit. Tell me about what the exhibit encompasses. This here at the Museum of the Bible, Washington, D.C. How big is it, and what is it? What's kind of like the showcase, or what's the main thing?
So it's hard to answer that question, because like, this is the first ever big international exhibition on the Samaritans.
Yeah.
We cover a lot of ground, as I've already said. It's a collaboration that we're doing with Yeshiva University in New York as part of their broader Samaritan project, where there's book and a cookbook and a documentary film that we're that we showed here the weekend of the opening. Lots of really fantastic stuff in that partnership.
Yeah.
And so what we did was sort of three pieces, and I'll get to the big exciting part of the three pieces.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'm going to get there. So we have the part that's the Samaritans sort of through their own eyes, called Meet the Samaritans. And the idea is to get people as close as they can to the Samaritans' view of themselves. Right. And so as a part of that, we had a wonderful Israeli filmmaker named Moshe Alafi, who also made the documentary I just mentioned, film six short films on important themes to Samaritan life, right? And sort of to put the people in the exhibition like they're in a Samaritan home, they're in a Samaritan synagogue, right? They're present at the Passover sacrifice, and sort of let them feel like they're participating in pieces of Samaritan life while they're also learning about it. And so that's really the major centerpiece there. And then alongside that, you know, important historical, as I mentioned, that beautiful stone from Delos at the very beginning, right, show the antiquity of life, the Samaritan diaspora, right, and the stone from the medieval synagogue that was in the president's house, right. So all the videos and the artifacts together, you know, tell the Samaritan story in the present, like what's their life like now, and you get to feel that in the films, and what was it like in the past, and what's their history. So that's that piece of it. And I think, you know, those two things talking to each other, just when you walk through the exhibit, it's really exciting because you feel like you're there, you know, in the Samaritan community, both in the present and in the past, and it moves you back and forth. And then we have a section that deals with the Samaritans' interactions with other peoples, right? So we call it encounters. So there's a piece on Jews and Samaritans, a piece on Christians and Samaritans, and a piece on Muslims and Samaritans, right? Each of the sort of the Abrahamic faiths, right? Each one has had different kinds of relationship with Samaritans over time, both positive and negative. And we want to tell all of those stories, and we want to be able to tell. In the Samaritan piece, we didn't want to feel like we were imposing on them. Samaritans are involved with the exhibit, right? We've got support from the Samaritan community for the book. The high priest wrote a very nice greeting, expressing his delight in the project. And so, you know, what we wanted to make sure that they got to tell their story, but at the same time, other people have other perspectives, and that's important too when you're telling a big scale exhibit. So we talk about those encounters. We tell a little bit of the Jewish side of the story in terms of the disagreements about the history, right? We talk about, of course, the Good Samaritan and the Samaritan woman at the well, and how both those stories in themselves as gospel stories, and also later reactions to them, art, right? There's a lot of wonderful art, you know, depicting both of those moments, and also Christian scholarship and Christian interest in the Samaritans and interaction with the Samaritans, you know, over the course of thousands of years up until sort of the culmination, also in that moment of the 19th century when things were very bad and the Samaritan high priest was working hard to sort of make things better. He built a relationship with an American Protestant named Reverend William Barton, who did a lot to really sort of help the Samaritans get back on their feet. He helped them build a school for themselves, became good friends with the high priest, and that relationship was very important to them as well. Then their history with the Muslims, which is a little bit less direct because the Muslims don't have the Samaritans sort of integrated into their religion in the same way sort of Jews and Christians do with the Bible and such.
Yeah.
But because they lived for so long in what was largely an Islamic culture, you know, they absorbed a lot of culture from Islam. You know, for many of them, as I mentioned, their first language is Arabic. So if their spoken language is Arabic, and if you look at how their traditional dress, right, it looks, it's very, very Near Eastern, right? And that's an important part of their life. You know, that's an important part of their history.
Yeah.
And they also how they've had to, you know, negotiate their lives as a religious minority under Islamic rule, which is a challenge. You know, any religious minority struggles. So both the ways in which they had good relationships, you know, when they had good relationships with the rulers, when they had bad relationships with the rulers, we talk about that.
You know, I live here in the West, and especially in Nevada, we have, I would call it a remnant, a huge population of people that claim they are Basque. We have Basque festivals, Basque food all around, and I'm not sure, you know, how many are actually Basque, But is this something similar to that, to where these people are, can they actually say, no, this is, we are from the tribe of Joseph? Can they, do they have something, or is, are they just kind of Samaritan in name only?
So look, they have been there continuously for thousands of years. That we know.
Yeah.
Right. There's archaeological evidence, right? There's manuscript evidence. We know there's been continuous Samaritan residence on or around Mount Gerizim since, you know, before the year zero.
Yeah.
Right. Like we know that. That's very, very clear. You know, when you get back to, if you're talking about sort of the scholarship piece of it,
yeah.
You know, it's very hard to trace anything back that far. And so our approach in the exhibit has been to sort of lay out the different sort of contested, you know, we present the sort of the story, the Jewish side of the way the Jews tell the story. We tell the Samaritans version of the story. And we want to sort of respect the way they understand their own history. And so we haven't really touched exactly that question. What is clear is that they have been there as Samaritans for a tremendous amount of time.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, does it go all the way back? It's hard to say.
Yeah. Well, I guess I was thinking about that because I had no idea Samaritans were even around anymore. You know, you think
so
they're gone.
So few people do.
Of course. But I thought, you know, I wonder why God has kept this remnant alive. Any thoughts on that?
So I know as in my capacity as a curator, I try not to answer those kinds of questions for people. I think it's an important question. I think it's a good question. I think those are questions that people should ask their faith leaders to help them think about.
Yeah.
The survival of a people that long, I just think, is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And you know, their long-term ability to survive and maintain their tradition and culture, even if it's been a struggle and continues to be a struggle, you know, is to me a beautiful thing.
Do they live isolated, or are they integrated in the regular communities all over?
They're very so. Today they have sort of two separate main places they live. There's some that live in, like I said, in Nablus, biblical Shechem, right on Mount Gerizim, or right at the foot of sort of the very bottom of the foot of Mount Gerizim. They have their own little neighborhood area. It's called Kiryat Luza, which they moved to relatively recently, actually. Up until I think 20 years, 30 years ago, they were living more integrated in the city, and they've kind of moved into their own neighborhood. And then they also, a number live in the Israeli suburb, the suburb of Tel Aviv called Holon. And they have a neighborhood there and a synagogue there. And those are sort of the two communities. And so both communities are integrated into the places where they live. It's very, their lives are complex, right? Mm-hmm. We say, you know, not Jewish, not Arab, not, you know, not Israeli, not Palestinian, right? And they're sort of, but also very much part of all of those communities and cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to navigate all of that in kind of complicated ways.
Now, was that in the same area where I understand where Shechem was, which would have been the place where their ancestor Joseph would have been sold into slavery? Is that near the same area?
Shechem is the same.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
All right. I'm just saying.
It's
Americanized.
It's that. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. I gotcha. So at this point, why try to preserve the history and the culture of these people, like the Samaritans, with the Museum of the Bible? What's the, you know, I can't imagine it's a financial gain for the Museum of the Bible, but what's the passion for you guys?
I'll tell you the story. I'm the curator of Hebraic and Judaica here at the museum. I have a PhD from Yeshiva University, and one of my really sort of mentors from my time as a graduate student approached me and said, I'm working on this big project. We want to move this exhibit to a bunch of different museums. I think this is a really good place for us to collaborate. I think this is a really important story to tell.
Yeah.
And he talked to me about the project in the way that I've been talking to you about, although a lot of that stuff also developed through our collaboration over time. But the core, you know, the core idea of an exhibition about the Samaritans, right, came to us from him and from them. And it seemed like a really wonderful place for us to collaborate. And because it's an important story, we think to everybody, right? To Jews, to Christians, to people of other faith, to people of no faith, because on the one hand, they have this very, very particular story, which is unique. But at the same time, the things they struggle with are, I think, the things that so many of us struggle with in the world, right? How do we maintain our tradition in the face of modernity? How do we understand ourselves and our relationships to God, our relationships to our history and our traditions in the modern world, when there's all kinds of different pressures, whether they're social, whether they're political, whether they're material, right? Poverty can be a major pressure too, and all of those are questions that I think everyone can learn from. And one piece of this, right, is that by telling the stories of Samaritans, we can tell that story. We can think about those things at a little bit of distance from ourselves, right? Which can then we turn back and relate to ourselves, but can be a little bit, make it a little bit easier to think about, right? So as much as we both want to tell their internal story, just because of sort of what I think is sort of the inherent value of their of position and their history, there's also a piece where telling their story can help us learn about ourselves, no matter who we are. And that's, I think, you know, a big reason why to tell it here as opposed to somewhere else.
Yeah. And so the big exhibit opened up on the 16th of September this month.
That's right.
And going well so far, a lot of attention, I would imagine.
Yeah, we've been getting good attention from all kinds of people. And we're excited to, you know, everyone should come and see it.
Yeah.
Come to DC. We're open till January 1st. It's going to be a real eye opener, and learn about people that are so important to so many of us, and we don't even know who they are.
But they're still around today.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are still around today.
Well, Dr. Jesse Abelman, curator for the new Samaritan exhibit at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. How can our listeners find out more about you or about the Samaritan exhibit? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the easiest way to do it is to go to our website, which is www.museumofthebible.org.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Dr. Jesse Abelman, curator of the new Samaritan exhibit at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. The exhibit is temporary, but will continue through this year. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Frank Turek on how popular movies reveal God.
They're not trying to advance any sort of Christian lesson or Christian worldview. They just happen to do so inadvertently because that's the nature of reality, that there is evil and there is good, and we need someone to come save us from evil and bring us to the promised land. And you just can't follow your heart. You just can't do whatever you want to get there. You have to rely on someone to come save you. And that actually is reality. Someone has to come save us.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.